Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Today, we have with us something that's going to be a little bit different for a bodybuilding podcast. I'm always trying to reach outside of what we consider to be the norm, and I feel like in bodybuilding podcasts, we have just a certain number of go-to topics. Last week, we spoke with IFBB pro Shelby Starnes about being the best competitor that you can be, and today, we're going to take that just to, maybe even a few steps deeper. I've got with us sports psychologist, Dr. Jack Singer. He's been practicing in this field for over 30 years, and I believe that he's going to have some really great information for us today. Dr. Singer, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Scott, and it's a real pleasure to be able to give some of my experience to your bodybuilding listeners. I think they'll be fascinated, and if they put some of these things to use, it can only help.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there listening that appreciate this too. So just to get us started here, tell me a little bit about your background. Tell me about your education. And also something I'm curious about, I'd really like to know, what made you decide to get into this line of work?
Well, this goes back quite a ways to when I was in high school. When I was in high school in the summertime, I worked in factories to earn enough money for college because my parents really didn't have a lot of money. And when I was working in these factories, the thought that kept running through my mind was, thank goodness I only have to do this in the summer. Mm. I don't know how I could ever do this for a livelihood. And I started wondering if there's anybody looking out for working people that way, for people who have these difficult jobs, tiresome jobs, you know, and so forth. And I started researching it and found out that there's a field of psychology called industrial psychology. And so when I went off to school at the University of Massachusetts, I became a psych major. Then I went to graduate school in Ohio at Bowling Green and really focused on industrial psychology. So initially, I wound up getting a PhD in industrial psychology and even worked for a division of General Motors in Flint, Michigan, as an industrial psychologist. At that time, I wasn't really involved in sports psychology. Hmm. Now, I then went into the Air Force because I had gone through ROTC. It was during the Vietnam War, and they called me into the Air Force. And while I was in the Air Force, they figured, well, he's a psychologist, so a good job for him would be to go out to tell women that their husbands or sons were dead or missing or prisoners, which is really clinical psychology, which I really didn't have any training in. But I became fascinated in that. So when I finished my Air Force commitment, I went back to school and got another PhD in clinical psychology. And the interesting thing about that was the head of the department was the first sports psychologist in the United States. So I took everything I could from him because I was fascinated. And that's really what opened the door for me to becoming a clinical slash sports psychologist, where I understand the whole human being and what makes the human being tick and moods and emotions, but I understand it specifically from an athlete's point of view. So that's really what led me to that career field. And because I have a son who is an extremely good athlete, I wanted to learn everything I could to help him so he could get a scholarship to go to college. And that's the brief history of how I got into this.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, something that I'm especially interested in here to talk about is hypnotism and the fact that you use hypnotism as part of your practice. The only other place that I've heard about this in bodybuilding is, I don't know if you're familiar with a bodybuilder from the 70s named Tom Platz.
No.
Okay. No. He was a famous bodybuilder, and he worked with a hypnotist named Pete Siegel. And there's a few shards of video floating around YouTube if you ever wanted to check it out. But this is something that's fascinating to me. And, you know, part of what is unique about bodybuilding, even at the upper pro level, you know, we don't have large teams around us. You know, you've worked with people all the way to the NFL, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we don't have teams like that. So a lot of these people are financing things out of their own pocket, and it could be difficult even at that level. So a lot of times, you know, a team for a bodybuilder might consist of a nutritionist, possibly somebody who's working with them on maybe their training, possibly a chiropractor, and hopefully a doctor to make sure that their lab work is all going well. But things like working with a sports psychologist and practicing things like hypnotism, this stuff is it's all very different, very unique. Before we get into hypnotism, though, specifically, because that's one thing I'd really like to talk about, just sports psychology in general, where would it benefit an athlete to bring somebody like yourself into the team?
Okay, so, you know, even if I'm working with a team, because you're talking about the fact that bodybuilders, Scott, don't have a large team, it doesn't matter. If I'm working with a football team, for example, I'm still working with every individual. That most of what I do is with the individuals, not with the, you know, the team per se, because it's the individual and what goes on in his or her mind that determines their success. Here's a simple formula for your listeners to embrace. One's performance, whether that's in bodybuilding, whether it's performing when you're trying to win, you know, a championship, whether it's being a professional speaker like I am, that doesn't matter what the performance is. But your performance always equals your talent plus your experience. And then there's a big minus distractions. The most important thing that a psychologist, a sports psychologist, does for athletes is help them to understand what these internal distractions are and to show them how to get rid of them. That's the biggest bugaboo for any athlete to overcome. Once they recognize those distractions, and the distractions all have to do with the little voice in their head, their little self-talk, that's what will either make or break them. That will either bring their huge potential to the surface or always keep it buried. So we always have to understand the distractions. And getting back to your earlier point about sports hypnosis, that can help someone focus on those distractions so that they can be blocked out. So that's one great example of the use of sports hypnosis to help an athlete to focus and concentrate.
Interesting. So as far as hypnotism goes, you know, a lot of people are familiar with hypnotism as a stage act, you know, something where, you know, a hypnotist tells somebody to cluck like a chicken and or do something else that's silly. What is the hypnosis that we are talking about here?
Okay, good question. We're talking about clinical hypnosis that is scientific. I belong to the American Society for Clinical Hypnosis. It's made up of psychologists, dentists, obstetricians, pain management doctors, and anesthesiologists, surgeons, people who use hypnosis in their clinical practices primarily. And there's a small division within that group of sports psychologists. So we do sports hypnosis. Stage hypnotism is hypnosis, but it's fake in a way. And let me explain what I mean by that.
Yeah.
When you look at this on TV, you don't see what led up to it. You don't see that the hypnotists, these are not scientists. These are people who go and learn how to perform hypnosis. The hypnotist does some screening. He asks if anyone in the audience has been hypnotized before. He takes the people who've raised their hands and say, would any of you like to have some fun and we can do some fun with it? Then he takes those who raise their hand and he brings them up on stage and he goes through three or more screening things until he's wound up, you know, with one or two or three people, whatever it is, who really enjoy making fools of themselves so that people will laugh. And so they're already hypnotized even before he puts them into a trance, because they know what's coming and they want to do it and they're happy about it and so forth. So it makes it look like, if you only look at the end result of this, that a hypnotist can make someone do something against their will. That's not true. No one can be hypnotized if they don't want to be, and nobody will do anything in terms of a post-hypnotic suggestion that they're not comfortable doing. So one of the reasons that a lot of athletes, for example, sometimes resist hypnosis is because many athletes are control people. They like to have complete control of as many things in their environment as possible. And because they've seen stage hypnosis, they think somehow you lose control if you use hypnosis, when in fact it's the opposite. Hypnosis helps you gain control over whatever you're trying to work on.
What type of athletes have you worked with using this?
I have used hypnosis and hypnotherapy, Scott, with virtually every sport you can think of. And even sports that I wasn't familiar with. Let me, if you want, I'll give you an example of that.
Sure.
You know this Ultimate Fighting Club, UFC?
Oh, yeah.
Which I really didn't have any knowledge of, frankly. I'd never watched it, didn't know much about it, heard about it, but, you know, knew it was in a cage, but didn't know anything about it. One day, a gentleman comes into my office, a massive gentleman comes into my office, and explains to me that he was the world heavyweight champion. He lost his crown, and he wanted to know if there was anything I could do to help him gain it back. And I used hypnosis with this guy who, you know, was very pessimistic, if you want to say, because he didn't know what hypnosis was. It sounded scary to him. I made a couple of recordings for him, and to make a long story short, he had a tremendous comeback, attributing a lot of it to the work that we did. You know, there were other issues I had to work on with him, like you do with every athlete. You just don't do hypnosis and that's the end of the story, because in this particular case, this athlete was a very fair-minded athlete. Now, let me explain what I mean by that.
Okay.
He would be in a UFC match, and if he didn't think he won, it didn't matter if the referee raised his hand. He would pull it down and say, no, he beat me. So that made his managers crazy. You can imagine how crazy they went, where this guy would not accept a victory if he didn't think he performed well. So that was another area of hypnosis that I needed to do with him. His managers and his team physician and everybody wanted me to help him to just accept what the objective referee sees and not screen it because of what he thinks inside. And so we had another focus for hypnosis. So you see, there are many different areas of hypnosis that we can use. Another person, a female UFC fighter, really needed me to use hypnosis so that she could go out and recognize what she had to do. She hadn't been a professional. This was going to be her first professional bout.
Okay.
And she didn't know exactly what to expect. So she wanted to go into a trance so that she wouldn't be nervous or scared and things like that when she went out, quotes, to perform the first time. So maybe your bodybuilders can recognize a little of what I'm talking about, because they are performers as well as exhibitors and whatever else you want to refer to them as, so that people can, you know, partake in the wonderful, tremendous work that they've done and how many years it's taken them to do this. So she needed me to put her in a hypnotic state where she would understand everything that was going to happen. The referee would come over and he'd check to make sure she didn't have any foreign substances on her hands and in her hair and stuff like that. And then there would be a weigh-in. I mean, we went through the exact process of what to expect so that it was like she was a veteran when she went there instead of a deer with her eyes in the lights.
Yeah.
You see? Okay, so there's a lot of different ways we can use hypnosis to help people take control of themselves, to focus and concentrate. And we'll get into more of it as you ask for different kinds of examples. So virtually every sport you can think of, I have used hypnosis very successfully with, and the athletes rave about it. I mean, the kinds of the remarks that I would get would be, before a game or a match, everyone else is listening to rap music or whatever they're listening to, and I'm listening to Dr. Jack's hypnotic recording core sports performance was one of mine. And I feel like I'm much more prepared to get into this match or game than anyone else around me, you know, things like that. So there have been rave reviews of how this worked. And most of these people were very skeptical in the beginning because, like you, they didn't really know much about hypnosis and it seemed odd to them. But they really embraced it. And you can imagine certain sports like golf, which is so mental, tennis. My son was a tennis player in college. Tennis, those are sports where it's really all you against the opponent.
Sure.
And so it's very much mental, and hypnosis is a huge adjunct for that.
Wow. Oh, this is interesting. So you had said playing tapes. So are you telling me that part of the program that you're working with this particular athlete would be, obviously it sounds like you're working one-on-one in person, but then there's more that they're playing a tape or an MP3 or something later?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's actually today they're MP3s. They used to be cassettes,
yeah.
But they're MP3s. Yeah. I don't expect an athlete to just learn a hypnotic technique and then he goes off and practices. I expect him or her to be accountable, meaning I need you to practice and we need to talk about what happened when you practiced. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I need to know how relaxed you were before and after. And there are a lot of things I have them go through so that they take this and embrace it as a new skill, as part of their training routine. So I make customized recordings. I mean, I have on my website some general recordings like core sports hypnosis and develop the mindset of a champion and how to overcome injuries quickly and pain control. But what I really love to do is when I'm working with an athlete one-on-one, and it can be by a phone, it doesn't have to be in person, I find out exactly what they need and design a very specific hypnotic program specifically for their needs. And I record it. And then I email the MP3 to them, and then they have this to practice.
Interesting. So what you're telling me is that you don't necessarily need a hypnotist right there with you, that this is something that
you can practice on
your own. Interesting.
Exactly. All you need is someone to teach you what to do and to make a recording, and then you listen to it then, and it continues. And it works and works and works. And then sometimes athletes will call me up and say, I'm getting kind of bored with that one, Dr. Jack. I'll say, fine, let's do another one and let's focus on this. And you can rotate them so you don't get bored, and everything works out great.
Interesting. So you had mentioned that the stage hypnotist is going to do a screening process that we don't see that happens, you know, before the show is being recorded. And through this process, they're selecting people that are going to be their ideal candidates.
Is
it true that some people are more susceptible to hypnotism than others?
Yes. If someone is worried about loss of control and they think that hypnosis is some of loss, they won't be able to be hypnotized. That's number one. So I have to talk to a lot of people about that just go with this and see what happens. And you realize it's going to give you immense control. They were not losing anything. You're learning how to take charge of the things that were getting in your way before. You're learning how to overcome obstacles. So that's gaining control. There's also about 10% of the population that's not capable of being hypnotized for reasons we don't really understand to this day.
Huh.
So about 10% of people can't be hypnotized no matter how much they want it. However, in my experience for more than 30 years, I can count on one hand, Scott, how many people I wasn't able to put into a hypnotic state.
Really?
So I've really had a huge success with a large number of people. Now, keep in mind, this is a powerful technique. At the Hypnosis Society meetings that I go to, I have watched a cesarean section being performed without any anesthesia.
No kidding. We're
talking about a powerful mind-over-body control technique. If a woman could have her abdomen sliced open and the baby taken out without any anesthesia and she's smiling the whole time, that shows you the tremendous power of your mind over your body. And that's the whole purpose of hypnosis, is to capture that power in a very positive way. Because what most athletes don't realize, and let's talk about bodybuilders, for example, is that they have been using negative hypnosis on themselves, but didn't know it. So let's take a bodybuilder I'll think of a case I had once. It was a female bodybuilder who was a firefighter, I remember, because she was having trouble getting off You know, she was on 3 days and off four or whatever, and she had to make her bodybuilding workouts around the time. I recall that very carefully, and it was getting her crazy. Like, how am I going to do this if I have to be at the fire station for 3 days in a row and things like that? So one of the things I worked on with her was to eliminate these negative thoughts that she had that were really getting in the way and depleting her energy and everything else, because she kept thinking things like, if I can't work out for 3 days in a row, I'll never be able to compete. That would be a form of negative hypnosis that someone could keep telling themselves, and your mind is going to go with whatever you say. If you keep repeating, I can't do well, or what if this happens, or statements like that, your brain is going to shut your body down because it thinks that's what you want to do. It's all connected with the fight or flight nervous system, that if you start worrying about things, your brain thinks there could be an emergency, and it tightens everything up, which prevents you from having the kind of workout that you're trying to have. So people have been negatively hypnotizing themselves without realizing they're doing anything like that for most of their careers until they learn about this and turn it around.
Interesting. So you're calling that, that's hypnotism right there, is the negative things we're thinking, I'm not going to be able to lift that, or I'm not going to be able to beat that guy, that we are programming ourselves. That's that's interesting stuff.
That's a form of hypnosis, which is focused attention. And you're now focusing your attention on something negative. Keep in mind this very important point I'm going to make now to all of your listeners. Your subconscious mind is neutral. It doesn't know what's right or wrong. It just goes with what the flow with you. And so if you say, I can't lift that much weight today, or I don't feel like lifting that much weight today, or I'm looking at the chiseled body of my opponent, I don't think I can beat her or him, your brain thinks that that's what you want to happen, and it's going to make that happen by slowing you down, tightening you up, doing all kinds of things to prevent you from being the best you can be at that moment.
Interesting. I've practiced mindfulness meditation, and in this practice, it's not something where, you know, you're trying to relax yourself as much as you're just trying to increase awareness of your thoughts. And also not only that, but also recognize that your thoughts aren't your emotions, that those are two separate things. I've heard you talk a little bit about this. Could you expand on that a little?
Sure. Your thoughts cause your emotions, Scott. Emotions don't come out of nowhere. If someone is feeling anxious or worried or depressed or happy or excited, that's because of what they were thinking about a situation. So let's say there's a competition coming up and you're backstage preparing to come out for your spot. If you're thinking a positive thoughts, I can't wait to get out there. I'm so excited that these butterflies I feel are excitement because I know how well I'm going to do. Then your brain is going to put you in the best position to perform your best. But if you're interpreting those butterflies as, oh my gosh, I can't believe how nervous I am, what if I don't do well? Your brain is going to lock down because it thinks you don't want to do well. So again, you have to understand that people determine their emotions by the thoughts they have. And once you recognize the thoughts, positive or negative, and learn how to control them, that's the key to everything, whether you're an athlete or an entrepreneur, doesn't matter. Mindfulness. Mindfulness is really taking the focus off of anything that's happened before and anything that you may be thinking will happen in the future, and just focusing right on the present. So for an example, a very simple mindfulness exercise for an athlete about ready to go out and perform would be, I focus on my breathing. I can feel the coolness in my nostrils as I breathe in through my nose. I hold my breath for the count of four, and then a big exhale out my mouth. I can feel the warm air coming out my mouth. That's blocking out all kinds of negative distractions and just focusing on what's happening right now in a very safe and practical way. That's mindfulness, and that leads to relaxation. So there are a lot of different ways to get at this. Hypnosis is just one of them.
Interesting. You know, you mentioned this breathing technique, and I've heard before that this is, it creates a physically relaxing environment in your body, the breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth. Is there anything science has to say about why that is?
You know, that's a good question I get asked all the time. And every time I go to a a hypnosis workshop or seminar, I ask the instructors, because everyone knows that, but no one can lead me to where this was discovered.
But it works.
But yeah, it works. Breathing in through your nose, holding it for 4 seconds or so, and then a big exhale to about seven, to the count of seven out your mouth, clears everything out of you and forces you to breathe through your diaphragm, which is the most relaxing kind of breathing there is. The people who are masters at breathing through their diaphragm are musicians and singers, because they need to get a full volume of air. Mm. And you can teach yourself how to do that by just sitting in a chair and folding your hands over your stomach until you get to the point where when you breathe in, your hands move out because your stomach is expanding. And when you breathe out, your hands come back in. That is breathing through your diaphragm, which sits behind your stomach. People can train themselves to do it, because most people, especially elite athletes and people like that who tend to be a little bit on edge and nervous, don't generally breathe through their diaphragms like that. They generally, when you have them fold their hands over their stomachs, their hands don't move when they're breathing. All the movement is taking place in their shoulders and their upper chest. Hmm. That's a shallow kind of breathing and causes more anxiety. You need to teach yourself to do the relaxing diaphragmatic breathing, which takes place down in the stomach area.
Interesting. I'm sure right now everybody at home has their hands on their stomach and they're trying this for themselves right now. You know you guys are.
Right.
So
right. And you can teach yourself to do that. Even if you forcefully push your stomach out for a few times, eventually, if you do it while you're watching TV or whatever, you will start doing it automatically. I had to teach it to myself as well. It didn't come naturally to me.
So, you know, a lot of the things we're talking about here, especially with sports, is, you know, this specific moment that you're going to perform. With bodybuilding, it's all encompassing. You know, our progress is the result of basically performing tasks one after the next, 24 hours a day, you know, from one contest to the next. So basically 365 days a year, you know, this is all work that's going in. How would you suggest that one of the bodybuilders at home today might stop and look at their entire life, their program, their nutrition, their training, their posing, all these different aspects? How would you suggest they look at their lives to see where hypnosis might be beneficial to them?
Well, I think first they need to make a list of their goals, and they need to see which of these goals are realistic.
Okay.
Because sometimes people set goals for themselves that are very impractical, and then they get frustrated when they don't meet them. So, for example, a bodybuilder who's new to the professional ranks, if he or she sets the goal that I'm going to win the first competition I'm in, that may be unrealistic because they don't have the experience to know all the nuances of what they need to do, or they don't have a trainer, haven't been training that long to understand which muscle group to work on, which days, and things like that. So they have to understand their goals, and people are 11 times more likely to work toward a goal if it's in writing rather than just thinking about it. So I always tell people to write down a list of goals, put them on the computer, on your desktop or something, and then I ask them three questions. And I do this sometimes under hypnosis, by the way, but I tell them the three questions. One of them is, how will I feel once I've accomplished this goal? What emotions can I anticipate having once I accomplish this goal? And how long do I think it will be realistically to accomplish this without changing my life to the point where it'll be stressful, or the people in my life will be upset, or things like that. Mm. And then the last question is the one that people never ask themselves, and that is, exactly what can I do to sabotage myself so I won't accomplish the goal? And that makes people recognize what they've been doing unconsciously all along to sabotage themselves. Mm. So, for example, if someone had a simple goal of maintaining a certain weight, once you ask them, how can you sabotage yourself, they start to recognize some of the habits they've had that have made maintaining that weight difficult. Like, I tend to run in and do shopping when I'm hungry. Mm. When people do that, they tend to buy junk food and things that'll satisfy them quickly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I say the hell with it, or, you know, whatever. So I want them to understand how they can sabotage themselves so that they can make sure that that's a warning sign and they won't do it. So back to your question, which is, how does the bodybuilder understand where hypnosis might be a good fit? Well, it literally is a fit anywhere in their program and anywhere in their routine. Is hypnosis important for understanding your relationships with people and how those impact your performance? Yes. Are you suffering from relationships because you're spending so much time working out and preparing yourself that the most important people to you are having a difficulty? Yes. What are we going to do about that? Are you having trouble staying on the nutritional regimen that your nutritionist has you on? If so, we can use hypnosis to help with that. Are you having difficulty working a certain muscle group? Or are you looking at your competition on the computer and getting yourself nervous? These are all areas where hypnosis can play a vital role.
Wow. And I can say that all of us have been guilty of at least one of those things at one time or another. It sounds to me like a lot of what you're saying is that, and I've caught myself doing this before, it reminds me of being on autopilot. I could drive to work every day and not even think about the ride. I just get in the car, and before you know it, you know, I'm there. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is to pay more attention to what we're thinking and what we're doing.
It's really interesting, Scott, that you use that metaphor. Because in all of my hypnotic programs, I have at the end, you are now on autopilot. You don't have to be thinking about this anymore. Your muscle memory will take over, and these things will happen without you having to worry about it, to concern yourself about it. You'll see magically it will happen like you're on autopilot. That's exactly what I tell people. You're using it in a little different context because you're saying maybe I need to pay more attention than just taking everything for granted. I'm saying that once you learn important healthy habits for whatever you're working on, then you don't have to think about it anymore. Let it just happen.
Wow.
Free your mind and let it happen. You see?
Wow. I love that.
So, for example, the famous golfer Tiger Woods was brought to a sports hypnotherapist by his father when he was 16.
Okay.
And he was taught how to use hypnosis when he was playing golf. And I have watched I watched Tiger Woods in one of his first professional tournaments. I happened to be living nearby where it was, and I was out there following him around, and his eyes were glassed over. He wasn't talking to anybody. People would call his name. He just kept going, and I knew he was in a state of self-hypnosis. And I think that has really worked well for him, as for many famous golfers who say that they really went to a sports hypnosis expert, to glass over so that everything's happening automatically and you don't really have to think about it or plan it, and especially you don't have to worry about it.
You know, some of the things that you had mentioned earlier, you had spoke about the UFC fighter that, you know, didn't want his hand raised if he didn't feel like he deserved to win. Last week, I was speaking to IFBB pro Shelby Starnes, and one of the topics we had discussed is the difference between, you know, being content and satisfied with the achievements we've made versus the complacency that can come along with almost spending too much time being okay with having achieved what you've achieved, being afraid almost though then that maybe we'll stop progressing after that. You know, I wonder if maybe the fighter you had spoke about was trying to use that as a tool almost to continue to be better. You know, I always feel like a lot of times maybe people could relate to this, or had a coach, or maybe like a father that was always too hard on them or too strict, but they had that best intention in mind to always just expect more and expect more. Could you talk a little bit about how that could sabotage you?
Oh, absolutely. I think that parents in particular, sometimes teachers and other important figures in our lives as we grow up, unintentionally sabotage us from doing what we want to do. Example. And perhaps your audience is the best example of people who have survived despite that. For example, I remember my father, when I told him I was going to become a professional speaker, my father, who was very shy, was projecting himself into me and said, "Are you sure you really want to do that? You know, what if you screw up and the people boo you?" I mean, he gave me a million reasons why I shouldn't want to become a professional speaker. And if I wasn't a learned psychologist and understanding what the dynamics of this was, I might have given up that goal because, after all, he's my dad, he's God, he should know what the story is. But I realized he's just projecting his own fears onto me, and I don't have those fears. So I would imagine that a large percentage of bodybuilders in your audience, unless one of their parents was a bodybuilder or they came from that mentality, had to overcome a lot of obstacles to devote their lives to doing that. And that's a psychological thing that you have to really deal with. You have to understand that your vision on what you want to do may not jive with the vision of people who say you need a real job or whatever they might say to you that would be negative. And, you know, I'll tell you a great example of a bodybuilder situation. When I was in the Air Force during the Vietnam War, I worked in a hospital in San Antonio.
Okay.
There was an eye surgeon there that in the summertime, we wore short sleeves as our uniform. The eye surgeon, I saw him writing in his notes one day, and every muscle in his arm was jumping around. He had huge muscular arms. And I said to him, "You must work out a lot." I mean, I didn't know anything about bodybuilding then. And he said, "Well, I'm actually a professional bodybuilder." And I said, and I asked about it, and I said, "That's amazing. You have instruments in your hand where you have to have this fine motor skills, but yet you've built up your gross motor skills and your muscles to the point where you're amazing." I mean, the guy looked amazing in the uniform. I mean, everybody raved about him. The girls thought he was wonderful, you know, and all of that. But I started to learn about bodybuilding and the devotion you put to it, and that you can really do other things in your life. It doesn't have to be your whole life. So he was an ophthalmologist, eye surgeon, but bodybuilding to him was very important, and it helped in, I don't know, he didn't need it for his self-esteem. He was already a doctor and, you know, an officer in the military and all of that.
Yeah.
So people go into this for all kinds of reasons. Sometimes they get encouragement, and sometimes they get discouragement from well-meaning but misinformed parents who don't know the harm they're doing. I'll give you a statistic. I didn't even know we'd be talking about this, but I think your listeners will find this fascinating. If we have time, can I give you a statistic?
Absolutely. I'm just sitting here fascinated with all this. So yeah, please do.
All right. So there is a professor named Shad Helmstetter who many years ago was studying children in this country between the ages of 6 and 18.
Okay.
And he thought that these formative 12 years were critical. And he wanted to find out how often the average youngster in this class, in this country during those 12 years, is given positive, go-for-it kinds of comments and recommendations and encouragement from their parents, their teachers, and other important people in their lives, versus how many times are they told, "No, you better not do that. You're not talented enough. You're going to be disappointed." You know, well-meaning parents, but they're trying to protect their children. And very amazingly, his research showed that the average youngster in this country during those 12 years between 6 and 18 is told negative, self-defeating kinds of things by these people 144,000 times to 4,000 positive comments.
Wow.
So the vast majority of us, when we're growing up, are invited to not take risks, to not try something new, to be complacent, to not make waves, to fly under the radar, to do all of these things that are counterproductive to being the best you can be. That's where this whole thing starts. And so the person who overcomes that sometimes needs help to do that, sometimes needs encouragement of a professional to do that. But those people, to me, are the heroes because they've overcome a tremendous amount of negative conditioning to be where they are. Whether they win consistently or not is not it. Just being in the game, to me, makes them winners.
Wow. I see everything you're saying here, and I'm seeing how this all ties into hypnosis now. I'm thinking about just that negative inner voice that I can have, and I'm sure everybody else can have, that I probably am not even paying attention to it a lot of times.
That's right.
Just to kind of give us a little bit more insight into this, could you possibly talk about some of the other ways that we could hold ourselves back with these negative thoughts and distorted perceptions?
Well, we have, I've written several books. One of them is called Conquer Your Internal Critic, So You Can Sing Your Own Song. That book is currently out of print, but I wrote that book. And every other book I write for various professionals, I have a book I wrote for teachers, I have a book I wrote for financial professionals. It all encompasses all of these things about the inner voice, the internal critic, that little negative voice that says, you better not try this, don't do that, what if this happens? And we know that about 77% of our unconscious thoughts are negative, self-defeating. Yeah. So if we can take a percentage of those and turn it around, if we can recognize when we're doing that and turn it around, it has a tremendously positive effect. And not only an effect on our performance, Scott, but we now know through a tremendous amount of research that when you change that voice to something positive, it actually enhances our immune systems and keeps us healthier living longer.
Yeah,
living longer. In fact, I'm doing a speech in a couple of weeks for older people called, and I entitled the speech, How to Live Much Longer Than Your Kids Ever Hoped You Would. and it's really the psychology of life extension. And, you know, I'm going to talk about three major ways to extend your life that all has been shown to be true through research in many countries among people who live to be over 100. And by the way, only 15% of our longevity is determined by genetics. So you have control over the other 85%, and it all starts with your thinking.
Wow.
That little voice inside your head. And, you know, if you can learn to have fun in your life and laugh, which reduces stress tremendously, that will extend your life. If you can learn how to have optimistic expectations, regardless of the adversity you face, that will extend your life. And if you can learn how to be mentally tough, which I teach people to do in 5 minutes, a 5-minute mental toughness routine, that will extend your life. So all of these things have been proven to reverse diseases, to prevent diseases from affecting people, and it all starts with your internal dialogue, because that's what determines where you're going to go with this, whether you're going to have optimistic expectations, whether you're going to allow yourself to let go and laugh and enjoy humor in your life, whether you're going to be mentally tough. All of it starts with your internal dialogue. So that is the core of what I work on with every athlete.
This is interesting. Would you mind today sharing with us just one of these tools on how everybody at home might be able to improve themselves today?
Great. I'm going to teach everyone how to be mentally tough in a short period of time.
Awesome.
So it starts with recognizing when a negative thought comes in your mind, some kind of adversity. So for a bodybuilder, it could be, I don't know if I can lift this weight today. I don't feel like it. I don't feel well. You know, I don't want to do it. Whatever that negative thought might be. Once you recognize the thought, you need to stop it dead in its tracks before it completes. Instead of a paragraph, you want to stop it so it's only a sentence. And the best way to stop it is to wear a rubber band, the kind that come in the mail, these fat rubber bands that sit loosely on your wrist, and snap the rubber band.
Huh.
Now, a bodybuilder may not want to wear a rubber band. You can slap your thigh, you can pinch yourself, anything that's going to get the attention of your subconscious mind. The first thing you do is snap the rubber band and tell yourself, stop this foolish thinking right here.
Hmm.
And you may have to snap a few times because people's thoughts are habits and they repeat themselves. So you may have to keep snapping until your subconscious mind does not want to feel that pain and it'll stop the thought. That's step one. Step two is you reward yourself for stopping the thought by doing one of these deep diaphragmatic breathing techniques that I told you, where you breathe in slowly to the count of four through your nose, hold it for four more seconds, then a big exhale for 7 seconds out through your mouth.
Okay.
You do that a couple of times, and that has now calmed you down.
Hmm.
Step three, you ask yourself, was the thought that I had rational? Was there another thing that could explain this? Do I really need to go with that thought? Wasn't there, maybe my thought is worrisome and it's not anything accurate. So I don't think I can lift this weight today. May not be based on anything objective except you don't feel great today. That doesn't mean you can't lift the weight. So you start logically breaking down the negative thoughts that you had, which before you just accepted. The next step is you repeat to yourself what I call your identity statement, your core identity statement. And this is all done inside your head, so you don't have to worry about modesty. Your core identity statement is what makes you the greatest you are. All of the work you've put into it, how wonderful you look, the comments you've gotten from other people, everything positive you can think of is your identity statement. It's time to tell that to yourself and to understand that that's really who you are. Does it mean you're perfect? No. Do you have to be perfect? No. If you don't lift that weight today, is that awful? No, it's not awful. It may just be disappointing, but it's not awful. So you have to put all of this in perspective. And then once you've done that, the last step is to take another, to anchor this with another set of relaxing breathing. So you've done this early on and you've done it at the end.
Okay.
And you can do this in 5 minutes every time negative thoughts or negative emotions overwhelm you. So you're in the car driving to the office or wherever you're going, the gym or wherever, and you're feeling anxious or you're feeling down or you're worried. The first thing is to say, what was I just thinking about? When you can capture that thought, stop the thought, snap it, say, stop this foolish thinking, examine it, you know, we'll first do the breathing, then examine the thought. Does this really make sense? Does just because I thought it doesn't make it true, by the way. That's something people need to understand, that we think a lot of things that, that doesn't make them true or accurate because we thought it. So, for example, if someone's I've had this in my practice, someone's afraid to get on an airplane because they're worried it's going to crash. That doesn't raise the probability of the plane crashing because that thought went through their mind.
Right.
The chances of it crashing are tiny. I had a woman once in my office who said, I don't think I can take this plane and I'll get fired if I don't do it because I need to go to this conference and lead the conference. And I told her all about the statistics on how often planes crash versus the millions of passenger miles and told her she had a much better chance of getting killed in a car crash leaving my office than getting on the plane.
Sure.
And she breathed a sigh of relief and said, you know, I think I can really take that plane now, but I'm not leaving your office.
In a way, would you consider these exercises a form of self-hypnotism, this snapping of the rubber band? Okay, okay.
Yes, what you're doing is you're giving yourself a routine, just like the bodybuilder has all kinds of routines that they go through. And that's a form of convincing your brain that this is good and this is what you want to do, and that's self-hypnosis. Remember, the definition of hypnosis is nothing magical. You don't go to sleep or anything. You put yourself in a state of consciousness where you focus your attention on something and block everything else out. So you don't have to be in a trance to call it hypnosis. A trance is just a deeper state of it where you've really blocked it out completely. And by the way, you didn't ask this question because you didn't know to ask it, but what are the key elements of my hypnotic program with any athlete? I can tell you this. I tell people that I am going to help them discover that they can stay focused on what I call the five C's for performance perfection, or perfection is not a word I usually use, but to be your best when you need to be. The five C's, these are all things that start with C. So in my hypnosis, I'm teaching them how to concentrate. I'm teaching them how to feel in control. I'm teaching them how to be consistent. I'm teaching them how to remain calm. And finally, how to remain confident. Those are the five C's that I put into all of my hypnotic programs.
Why is it that this isn't more mainstream? Because I could see how this can work. It just makes total sense to me at this point. I feel like this is something that everybody should be using. I mean, not only in sports, not only in bodybuilding, but really, I feel like I could see where this could benefit everybody in all aspects of life.
Yeah, absolutely true, and that's right. And I used it not just with my athletes, but in all kinds of cases, people with marital problems. I did hypnosis of both husband and wife and things like that at the same time to help with their communication skills, for example. Mm. So it people with illnesses, I've had many examples of people who were told there's no cure for this cancer, and they came to me desperate, can hypnosis help? I said, let's see. And the cancer went into remission. So I've seen this over and over and over again. It's not perfect. It doesn't work every time for everybody. So there's no guarantees, but you have nothing to lose and you're not putting anything in your body. This is simply a mind control situation. Why isn't it mainstream? The big reason is because of what you started with when you talked about stage hypnotists. That's what most people think hypnosis is, and it seems weird and goofy, and they're not going to do that. So they have to be educated about what clinical hypnosis is.
Hmm. That makes sense. And you know what? One other thing I'm thinking too is I feel like we all want things so quickly. It would be a lot easier to take a pill to overcome your fear of getting on a plane versus putting this work in.
That's right. I think that's a very valid point. But this work is not so hard. This is for a bodybuilder, this work is nothing compared with what the work they put in to perfect their sport and to perfect their talent. This work is nothing. It means taking 10 minutes a day and putting yourself in an altered state of consciousness to prepare for your workout or to prepare for your performance or to practice this. This is not heavy duty. You have to do this for 4 or 5 hours a day or it won't work. This is the least intrusive thing that they have to do.
And, you know, one thing that I didn't even expect you were going to touch on was the strain on relationships aspect, because I know that that's a huge topic for us. It's you know, everybody in the sport will say that bodybuilding is a selfish sport, and the people around us, you know, they at times they really have to just kind of put life on hold, you know, during that last 4 or 6 weeks of a competition prep, and that's stressful on them. I honestly didn't expect to hear anything about that today. So it is, like I said, it's definitely opening my mind as to how many places this could be used.
Oh, absolutely. And when any athlete comes to see me, before we even get into talking about hypnosis or anything, I want to know what their life is like, either with their parents, if they're a young athlete, or with a special person in their life, because that relationship issue can undermine their performance. I will tell you a classic example of a female professional golfer who came to see me, and she couldn't understand why she kept missing the cut on Thursdays by one stroke, or on Fridays, whenever the cut was.
Okay.
She would miss by one stroke, and she was out of the money, and she'd been playing golf for 14 years and making a lot of money. She couldn't understand it, and so I said, the first thing I want to talk about are the important relationships in your life. And she was thought, well, why is that important? Why don't you just help me with my golf? So I said, just trust me on this. It turned out that she was having a major anger issue with her caddy, but wasn't consciously aware of it. She just blocked it out because she depended so much on the caddy. And the caddy was like taking over her life, not only in golf, but where are we going to eat and everything else. And until we worked through that, she wasn't going to be her best at golf. And once we worked through it, everything got back to where it was.
No kidding. So you said that you can work with people not just in person, but over the phone. This is the point of the show. I want to find out everything. Where can people reach out to you if they wanted to work with you? You know, what websites should they go to? Lay it all on me.
Okay. Well, the website that you probably found me on is drjacksinger.com. That's where my clinical and sports psychology information is, with comments from athletes and things like that. So they can go to www.drjacksinger.com. My phone number is 949 area code. I'm located in the East Coast in North Carolina.
Okay.
949-481-5660. there are other websites. If people are connected with an organization that's looking for a dynamic speaker to talk about some of these things and customize it for whatever their jobs are, that's what I do mostly. I'm all over the country speaking. So I've spoken for strength and conditioning coaches, but I've also spoken for hospitals and medical associations and legal associations and especially financial professionals. I have a program called Actionable Skills to Develop the Mindset of a Champion. So they can learn more about that by going to my website, www.developthemindsetofachampion.com, or they can go to www.advisingtheadvisors.com. Those two websites will teach them everything or show them everything they need to know. And if they have any questions, whether it's personally or anything else, any listeners of yours, I will give them a free 20-minute phone consultation, Scott.
Oh, wow.
They just need to call me. If I'm not here at that number, 949-481-5660, just leave a message with your number slowly and clearly, and I will get back to them personally.
Okay, awesome. We really appreciate that, Jack. This is really cool. Now, tell me, is there anything else that I'm missing here today that we shouldn't be talking about that I haven't picked up on yet?
Well, because you're so incisive and you're so you understand the dynamics much more than I would expect from someone who's never been exposed to it. You knew which questions to ask, so you really got me to talk about all the important things. It starts with your internal dialogue, and we need to take charge of that, or nothing else will ever be as good as it is. To release the giant that lies within all of us, we need to understand how we've been keeping it buried under concrete layers of lack of confidence or indecisiveness or fear of failure. So I uncover all of these things for you so that doesn't happen anymore.
Well, Dr. Jack Singer, thank you very much for being with me. This has been really cool.
It's been my pleasure. I will come back and do Dr. Jack 2.0 anytime you want, especially if you get comments from people who say they want to hear more of it. And now you've motivated me, so I need to go down to the gym and do a little bit of lifting here.
All right. That sounds great. Well, we'll be keeping our eye on you and be watching your progress. Guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Dr. Jack Singer.
Radio Network.